Welcome to The Informed Gardener with your host, Dr. Linda Chalker-Scott, Associate Professor and Extension Urban Horticulturist at Washington State University. And now, the science behind gardening with Dr. Linda.
Hi, I'm Linda Chalker-Scott, and welcome back to Season 3 of The Informed Gardener. I'm your online garden advisor, bringing you current and practical scientific information for use in your own gardens and landscapes. Every week, I try to follow a theme throughout the podcast, and this week's theme is Say It With Flowers. So first, let's look at flowers in the news.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's gotta be a little rain sometime.
Well, the first one I found from my very favorite online science geek website, sciencedaily.com, is why buttercups reflect yellow on chins. Now, if you were a little kid, when you were out playing in the field or whatever, and you'd find buttercups, and you know, they look like butter, they're just bright yellow, and you can get the stuff in your fingers and it's yellow. And there was this game you could play where you put the buttercup under your friend's chin to see if they like butter. And if they reflected yellow on the bottom of their chin, it meant they like butter. So scientists have wondered for a long time, why is it that the flowers do that? Because there's no other flower that we know that you can actually put under the chin and it reflects back a color. So they've been studying what it looks like under the microscope, and they found that there's actually two layers of epidermal cells. And the first layer is really flat. It's like glass. It's just completely smooth. And under that, there's an airspace, and then under that comes the rest of the layers of the flower. And it turns out with that really flat epidermal space and the airspace, that it's like glass, and it's like a mirror. And so the light comes in, and obviously the flower is yellow, so it's absorbing some light. It actually absorbs blue light and green light. It reflects back a lot of yellow light. And so that stuff just bounces right back. And so if you stick it under your chin, you'll have all this light shining on the bottom of your chin. And that's why buttercups do that. And obviously there's more than, you know, they obviously are appealing more to than kids to play with them. They actually are reflecting back ultraviolet light as well. And ultraviolet light is what bees use to hone in on flowers. And we can't see it, but to them it's a very distinctive dark color, and they can hone in on where the flower is. So that's why buttercups have this unusual epidermal layer that reflects light back to get those bees in, and obviously attracts children as well.
So take your hat off when you're talking to me, and be there when I feed the tree.
The second article I found is called Blowing in the Wind, How Hidden Flower Features Are Crucial for Bees. So we're back to bees again. And this has to do with some other flowers that you're probably familiar with, things like petunias and roses and some other things, especially petunias. If you look at their flowers, they almost look velvety in color. I mean, especially the dark purple ones, they almost look like velvet. They don't feel like it, but they just have that appearance. And it turns out the reason is because those epidermal cells have a very long kind of cone-shaped pieces to them, and they're all running the same direction. It's kind of like the surface of a cat tongue or like Velcro. And so scientists have been wondering for a while, well, you know, why would flowers have this on their petal surface? Well, you know, what possible use is that? And it turns out with roses and petunias and a lot of other types of flowers that they're kind of a bowl shape. And so there's a shallow bowl that has nectar in the middle. And the trick is for insects, obviously, to get in there and get the nectar without falling out. So they're wondering, maybe this Velcro-like stuff is for the insects so that their legs can stick to it rather than them falling off. So they set up an experiment. They were using these flowers like petunias and roses and a lot of other rather shallow looking flowers have nectar in the bottom, and insects come in to get the nectar, but with a really shallow bowl, it's easy to fall out. So scientists have been wondering if all these little projections on the surface are to keep the insects' legs attached to the flowers so they don't fall out, so kind of the Velcro stickiness. So what they did is they got some bumblebees and two different strains of petunias. One strain has these little cone-shaped rods sticking out of the flower, and the other ones didn't. They're smooth. It's a mutant. They're completely smooth. And so they had the bumblebees select which ones they liked better. And so the bumblebees had never been exposed to these flowers before, and they flew around, and they seemed to prefer the ones that had the little cone-shaped projections coming out. Well, that doesn't really prove anything. It could be a variety of reasons. So what they decided to do was mimic wind. Now, this is really funny. If you're familiar with microbiology at all, one of the things they use for culturing bacteria and fungi is agar. And sometimes those are in plates, and sometimes they're in flasks. And the ones in flasks are liquid. They're not solid like the plates where you inoculate stuff. And they'll take this liquid agar and then they'll put bacterial culture in it and they put it on a shaker and it goes back and forth and back and forth very, very softly, but then you can crank it up and make it go really fast. So they used one of these agar shakers and they put the plants on the agar shakers and then they had the bees flying around trying to land on the plants with the agar shaker taking the plants back and forth and back and forth like wind. And they found out that as they did that, especially as they cranked it up, made it windier and windier as the flowers are flopping back and forth, that if the bees tried to land on the mutant petunias without the little projections, they fell off. And they could stick on to the normal petunias that have the little Velcro projections. So that's why, apparently, these flowers have that. It's just a way for the insects to clamp on as they're getting in there to get the nectar and obviously to do their pollinating as well. So you have to wonder, what about those buttercups? They're really smooth and glassy. How do things stick onto those? Another question for research. There's a dark fading light in the garden where you lay your head tonight. And the third story I found, this is a history story as well as a flower story. It's called Heritage Site Under Attack by Flowers. Sounds like some kind of science fiction movie, but it's not. This is in Serbia, and in Belgrade, there's a fortress that was built there in the Middle Ages, and it's been there, obviously, for centuries. It overlooks the Danube and the Sava rivers, so it was a very strategic spot. And it's all made out of limestone. And it stood there for, as I said, centuries. And now, obviously, it's not used for wartime anymore. It's more now a park, and they've planted flowers around it. It has a very park-like setting, and it draws tourists, and it draws locals, and it's just a very nice place to be. In the last 20 years or so, they've noticed this black crust forming on these limestone walls, which is really unusual. And they thought possibly it was from all the coal burning that they tend to do still in Europe for energy production, and that possibly all of that sulfur dioxide was creating this black crust on the walls, which is very common. So they did some experiments on the wall itself to figure out, well, what chemical is causing the blackness. And what you have to know about limestone is actually calcium carbonate. So it's got calcium in it, has carbon in it, has oxygen. And then the sulfur dioxide, if it was from that, would be sulfur and oxygen. When they did the test, they found out there was potassium that was causing the blackness. And that was really weird because potassium isn't part of sulfur dioxide. In fact, it's not any kind of air pollutant at all. You don't find potassium up in the air. But they did some soil tests, and what they found out was there was a ton of potassium in the soil. And that was because they were overusing fertilizer to take care of all these plants that they'd planted there to make this wonderful park-like setting. So it was because of this heavy-duty overuse of fertilizer that in 20 years they've managed to create this black mess on these walls that have stood there for centuries. So it's a really good example of why you don't overuse fertilizers in your garden. Well, one of my very favorite things to do, as you know, is to bust myths. And whenever I can tie that into my other favorite thing, which is getting on a soapbox and kind of ranting and raving about things, it's even more fun for me. And so I'll try to control myself so I don't rant, rave, and foam too much all over my microphone. But I have this flyer that I got from my dear colleague who recently retired and likes to kind of tweak me every once in a while because he likes to watch me rave. And it's a flyer from an unnamed garden celebrity who loves to give the most outrageous garden advice you've ever seen and make a ton of money doing it. And you have to understand that this advice is not science-based. It's just completely pulled out of his hat or someplace in terms of what he tells people to do in their gardens. And this flyer also has these pictures that people send of all these giant fruits and flowers and says, oh, these are so wonderful. It's all thanks to your wonderful tonics. And after I finished looking at this thing, I noticed there's half moon dents in the paper from my fingernails digging into it because it was making me so angry. So you might ask, why do I care? You know, why do I let this get to me so much? Well, first of all, he gives himself a title that he has neither earned nor deserved. That always bugs me. Kind of like in the Austin Power movie with Dr. Evil. I didn't spend 5 years in evil medical school to be called Mr. Thank you very much. So when you spend a lot of time working on an advanced degree and you earn that degree, it really irritates you when people start using those types of titles to describe themselves when they haven't earned them or deserve them. And I don't know, someone who is a self-proclaimed expert, I don't have a whole lot of trust in that. I mean, would you go to someone who said they were a self-proclaimed expert in medicine if you had a health problem? Would you go to them? I don't think so. So why would you do the same thing in your garden? Why not really look for a true expert rather than someone who says they're an expert? The second reason this guy, this snake oil salesman, bothers me so much is that he recommends using a lot of really nasty household chemicals in your garden. Now, it's not to say that we shouldn't be using household chemicals because we've got needs for them. We need bleach for certain things. We need soaps. We need detergents. We need a whole lot of things that are pretty powerful. But just because they're powerful and that we can legally buy them doesn't mean that we should just take them outside and put them all over the place. So he's got this book of bogus brews, and I think it's kind of fun to look at some of them to see what he recommends. So here's the first recipe. Mix up a bowl of sugar, bone meal, and Epsom salts and add it to the planting hole when you're planting flowers. This will give them something nutritious to munch on. The whole visual of roots having mouths in the first place aside, all this stuff is things plants don't need. Plants make their own sugar. You don't have to add sugar. The microbes love it. If you want to feed your microbes, you can certainly add sugar, but they can eat other things besides sugar. Bone meal is just phosphate. Your soil has plenty of phosphate. Don't need more phosphate in there. Epsom salts, just magnesium sulfate. Your soil has plenty of those too. So you don't need the extra phosphate, you don't need the magnesium, you don't need the sulfate, you don't need the sugar. This is just a waste of time. There's nothing magical in this. It's resources that you're throwing into the soil rather than using where they belong. You're wasting your time, your energy, your money, and you're suspending belief. Not a good idea. Here's another one. Sprinkle Epsom salts on the soil after planting. It gives bulbs a dose of much needed nitrogen. Now this is a direct quote, I'm not making this up. If you were a careful listener, you know that I just told you Epsom salts is magnesium sulfate. It's not nitrogen. So that's kind of a big mistake because those are completely different elements. So again, it's one of those things, you've got to be a careful reader with this stuff. And here's a final one about flowers. To keep the color going in your garden, serve up a beer, baby shampoo, and corn syrup mix. Okay, let's take that one apart. Beer, well, you know, beer's good, but your flowers aren't going to drink the beer and they're not going to be happy after they get it on their roots. It's alcohol, not necessarily a good thing for roots. It's sugars, which again, microbes will get happy, but not your flowers. Baby shampoo is soap. Okay, soap is not a good thing to put on your flowers. And corn syrup, again, it's just sugar. So it's another waste of a whole bunch of materials that just kind of sounds interesting and wow, it must be something to it, or why would he write this down? So that's what people do. Amazingly enough, he has taught, he used the word in quotation marks, over 32 million people how to misapply household chemicals in their gardens. Amazing. Well, let's follow up the rant with something more positive. And this last segment is my garden tips, where I try to bring the science together with some positive things you can do for your garden. So now that you know what you shouldn't be adding to your flowers, let's talk about some things that you should be adding to your flowers. Now, number one is water. That seems kind of obvious. Obviously, you need to irrigate or you're not going to have flowers at all. You have little brown crinkly things at the end of stems. But water is also a great way to get rid of aphids. Now, this is not only effective, but it's chemical-free and it's fun. So what you do is you go out and you look at your plants, especially roses. Look, the new roses coming up, they're going to have aphids all over them. They always do. So you just get your little handheld sprayer on the hose. You don't want to turn on full blast. You know, you don't want to power blast. Don't use a power washer for this. You don't need that. That's just a handheld hose. And you can blast those aphids right off. Doesn't hurt the roses at all. And then the aphids are gone. You've used no chemicals. And you've actually just added some water to the environment of your flowers. Doesn't hurt them a bit. Second thing, a little bit of fertilizer is better than too much. In fact, you may not need any fertilizer. The reason I mention this is if you add too much fertilizer, the plant will appreciate it, but it'll put all of its resources into more leaves. This is what plants tend to do. They tend to put a ton of leaves out and not put so much out in terms of flowers if they have lots of fertilizer. So you want to hold back on the fertilizer to make sure that they do bloom. Third thing you need, mulch. And those of you that have heard me before, sick and tired of hearing this, I know, mulch this, mulch that, but absolutely, you see these flower beds that are raked clean. Now, people get out, I've seen people with brooms that sweep off their flower beds. So it's just this hard pan surface. It's like a desert. And the poor roots are down there. They have nothing to drink. They have nothing to eat. The microbes are starving. Everything's unhappy, but it looks really nice and clean. Go for the messy look. The beds need to be more unmade looking rather than looking all neat and tidy. So you want mulch. You want nice organic mulch. And whether it's wood chips or compost, whatever you like, doesn't matter. But you want it there. Bare soil's unnatural. Don't do it. And finally, pruning. Obviously, you probably know you need to take off dead flowers, you know, the deadheading part to keep the dead flowers off, but cut off some good flowers too and bring them inside, because your garden should give you pleasure inside as well as outside. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. Please join us next time when our theme will be What's Bugging You? Until then, happy gardening.
You've been listening to The Informed Gardener. To catch previous shows from other seasons, go to theinformedgardener.com, mynorthwest.com, and search for us on Stitcher and iTunes. Happy gardening!